seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
And you're very welcome along, Golf Weekly listeners. It's good to have you with us. Nathan Murphy alongside me. Hello, Nathan.
Hello, Joe.
And Peter Lawrie is here. Hello, Peter.
Hello, Joe.
You're very welcome. It was just me and you the other week.
Yes. And Nathan didn't even tweet it out. He kept it to himself.
In fairness, he was off work. I probably should have.
Did you tweet it out?
But I had other things to do.
He didn't. No,
that's
it was
the problem.
Yeah, well, there you go.
While O74 was in touch, though, he heard it. Okay. He said, I loved the nerd off on the pod this week. Really useful insight, Lance.
What did you talk about?
We went deep into the golf swing.
Okay.
Actually, Joe got a lesson.
God, I'm glad. Sorry.
Joe got a lesson online. Everybody had to listen.
Well, then I think it's a positive thing that maybe you didn't tweet this out and inflict it upon
I
the
hijacked
listener.
Entire pod to get some tips.
Were you standing up at any stage?
No, I didn't do that. Okay. Didn't do that. Although we did invite listeners to send us shots.
Oh, I was wondering
swings.
Why there was videos coming in.
They're coming in.
Are
so
they?
People heard this. Listen, people are out there listening. So we've got some.
So what's your plan of the videos that people have sent in, Joe?
Well, obviously it won't work as a podcast. We accept that.
But we are on video here, so.
Precisely. So our plan is, I guess, at some stage, particularly in a quiet week over the next month, maybe, to just come in and do what is ostensibly a video podcast. And Peter will give his tips on, we think, 8 is a good number, 8 to 12 swings. Depends how quick you want to go through them. You can't just say rubbish, not bad. You have to actually give some tips.
Of course, the highlight of that entire process is going to be that myself and Joe have obviously going to give our opinions on your swing as well.
That's the best part. Yeah. I've already seen a swing which is better than mine and I could see what was wrong with it.
Ooh.
Wasn't compressing the ball, he was scooping it up a bit.
Right.
For my liking.
Okay.
So yes, we're going to give our
opinion. That was your expert
opinion.
He
was a three handicapper, but...
Sorry, my expert opinion was right though. I'll show you the swing afterwards and you'll agree with me.
Let's not forget, this is a man who stood behind Phil Mickelson and was... Phil Mickelson's coach didn't know what the hell was going on.
Sorry, I can spot what's wrong in other people's swings. I just can't see my own to see what's wrong with it. That's the problem. Mm. So I'll let you talk for the majority of the time. Don't worry, Peter.
Thanks.
No worries. So there's something going on here with Eric Murray and Keelan Sexton. They've obviously had some prior conversation and they're turning to you to settle the bet. So Eric Murray has tweeted in to say... Player Peter thinks had the least natural amount of ability who achieved the most in world golf. And instantly Keelan Sexton wrote back, you've asked that question looking for a specific answer. And I do feel like that question is aimed squarely at Padraig Harrington. I just felt the way that was phrased, it was a Padraig Harrington answer he was looking for. But anyway, who is the player who had the least amount of natural ability, if we believe in such a thing, who achieved the most in world golf?
Natural
ability. I assumed that. You thought Padraig Harrington?
Oh, yeah.
No chance.
I thought Jordan Spieth.
No, I wouldn't even go down that road for you, Nathan, even though you're a
Padraig
lover.
Padraig Harrington's won 3 majors. By his own admission, had a horrible, scuttery little cut up the fairway.
But natural ability, as Nathan would say, is, you know, being able to get the ball in the hole in the least amount of shots. Is that not natural ability? Or
know.
Is it natural ability no, of how talent. You're going to swing the golf club?
I interpret natural ability as talent.
Having an aesthetically beautiful swing, or just
so, yeah, more just yeah, like oh, he looks like a golfer. He's a golfer. He's got talent. He can hit all the shots. Whereas there's a lot of players, I presume, who didn't take to it as naturally and just grafted so hard they turned themselves into a force of nature.
Who overachieved the most with the talent they had?
Yes, I suppose you could put it that way. Who thinks he had the least natural ability but achieved the most in world golf?
I want to say one person, and I'm frightened to say that person because Nathan is going to be all over me.
You can't say Spieth.
No.
Okay.
Faldo.
That's a good answer. I can see that.
Nick Faldo.
Yeah.
Right.
You're not going to jump on me on this
one? No, I think that's fair.
Okay.
Why would you think we would jump on you?
Yeah. Because he's had a stellar career, as they would say.
Six majors.
Most successful European of all time.
Yeah. But it was built on numbers for Faldo. You know, everything was David Ledbetter, yeah. Number swings.
Yeah.
Was there a natural ability there beforehand? He didn't take up the game till he was 16, so possibly I would have to say he's the person who's most achieved with the least natural ability.
That's a very good answer. Because you see, I guess when you're doing that answer, you have to take into account what they've won. Like six majors is such a big haul, you know?
Yeah. Harrington, definitely not. Borick had lots of natural ability.
Around the green?
Around golf in general.
Okay. So does he downplay how bad he was?
Oh, he goes to every tournament and he tells everybody he's playing rubbish when he's not.
But I mean, does he downplay how bad he was?
Yes, he does.
Before he
but even that, like he'll say that he was rubbish. He was this, he was that, and he couldn't hit it. And when he could, when you look back, you don't finish second that many times as an amateur, okay, having no natural ability.
Okay, so Faldo, it is. Let us know, Keelan and Eric, who Eric was trying to get Peter to say.
What about current players?
Don't say Jordan Spieth.
No, I'm not going to say Jordan Spieth.
You really want to say Jordan Spieth?
Of course I want to say Jordan Spieth. No, I don't.
Who do you look at and go, how has he won that many tournaments?
Jordan Spieth.
Jeekers, no, I'm not going to say Jordan Spieth just to suit you, but there's loads of names running through my head and trying to pick
one. Well, loads of guys I think are rubbish.
Yeah, and they've... I want to say Ian Poulter.
You can.
Okay, thanks. But I just want to be—I want to be correct in this one. Ian Poulter was and is a guy who has exceptionally overachieved for the standard that he has, in my opinion.
Oh, I think it's fair. I mean, he turned pro at 4 handicap.
Yeah,
I think he'd probably take that as a compliment.
But the one thing he does have—he has belief in himself. And if we could instill that into every Irish golfer that's coming up, that kind of belief, we'd have so many more Irish superstars.
I thought you were going to say we'd have some amount of pains in the hole around the Irish golfing circuit.
That's absolutely terrible.
Wow.
But we could. There's a couple of guys who need that belief in themselves. They're good enough to be top of the pile, and they just don't have that belief in themselves. I'm not talking, there's guys who are on the Alps Tour or the some parts of the Challenge Tour or whatever. If they had that little bit more belief in themselves, they'd be definitely European Tour, winning on the European Tour.
Any other names? Any other contenders behind Poulter that went through your mind?
No, Poulter's probably, he jumped out, yeah.
What about at the other end? I'm not forcing you to name names of people you grew up playing with who had exceptional talent and went wayward for one reason or another, but maybe the best golfer, guys who've won majors, who maybe won one or two, who should have won far more.
Jordan Spieth.
He should have more than three.
Dustin Johnson, I would have thought.
Yeah, Dustin Johnson for sure. Who's won? Ernie Els. Should have won more majors, for sure.
It's Tiger's fault.
He was in the Tiger era.
Yeah.
But there again, he still put himself into so many good positions that he should have won from it, never mind Tiger.
Monty?
No. No, he was definitely a
he got the correct number of majors.
He was an overachiever of what he had. I would have put him in the Ian Poulter category.
Really?
Yeah.
Right. Ernie is someone I would think of as talent. You know, I feel he could have done anything, whatever sport he took up, he was talented.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
Retief Goosen was another one.
Inducted into the Hall of Fame actually this month.
Okay, well done. Yeah. Well done, IMG. Another IMG client.
50 years of age, 2 majors, wins on tour. Is he not deserving of membership in the Hall of Fame? No. That's an IMG one as well.
More deserving than a few of their other guys. Mm. Ian Woosnam was a guy who was not put into the Hall of Fame until recently, I believe. You know, he should have been in the Hall of Fame before that.
How did he hit the ball so far, Woosnam?
Speed and strength.
He's just such a little fella.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean you can't have speed and strength. You don't have to be tall.
He was especially small.
Let's bring him in here, will we? With a few.
He was tiny. He was long by any standards.
He was very long.
I'm saying, like, people may not realise, I'm sure younger listeners may not, but he was long for.
Well, he flew. Well, if we go back to the Masters, he was able to fly the bunker on the left hand side that Sandy Lyle hit it into.
Yeah.
And Sandy wasn't short in this time.
So he wasn't just long for a small guy. He was one of the longer guys on tour, and I think it's amazing. Any small guy who can do that, because look, they don't have the same amount of leverage as the others.
They don't have the same width, but they definitely have swing speed and timing. There's a few very long hitters out there, like Richard Stern is an exceptionally long hitter. He's not that big. Lou Oosthuizen, another guy who's
Rory, I guess,
who's
is
small.
The obvious example.
Rory,
yeah.
You know, they're not massive guys.
Mm. Any other last questions do we want on talent or no talent, Nathan?
No, we'll come back to it.
Okay. Danny Finnan wonders then at Golf Weekly OTB, Peter, how quote unquote easy are these PGA Tour courses that the pros play most weeks? It's a drum that gets beaten a lot by European Tour folk and Sky pundits. I would love to see the scoring stats if the PGA Tour players did a full year on the European Tour course circuit and vice versa. Are we a bit unfair on the PGA Tour courses when we just call it dartboard golf?
No, because they have certain golf courses on that throughout the year that are, what would you call them, resort-type golf courses that they play on. The European Tour very rarely goes to a resort-style golf course. And when they do, you'll see the scores, you know, dramatically increase to 22, 23, 24 under. Take, for example, the German Masters, or the BMW, it is now, German Masters. That is always won with exceptionally low scoring because it is a resort-style golf course, especially when they play the one which is based beside the BMW main factory. The last 2 years they played the one that Langer had designed, which is a little bit more difficult. So when you revert that one to kind of an American-style golf course, you see the scores going up. So I don't think we overplay it. I think we make the point that it is much easier to score on an American-style golf course than it is on a European-style golf course. And they play in conditions that are probably better than we have on a week-to-week basis.
Okay.
There's probably a little bit of a myth building up and seen in that tweet because of what happened at the Ryder Cup, that American players cannot play hard golf courses.
They don't like playing hard golf courses. Mickelson said, why would I come here? Why would I play a golf course like this? It beats me up the whole time. But, you know, European Tour guys don't have that option to play any golf courses that they want to. That's the golf course that's set out. There's your exam paper. Now let's go see how you can do.
It's an interesting divide, though, isn't it? Because you look at, say, Shane Lowry this week at Valderrama, a really tough test of golf that I imagine an awful lot of those American players wouldn't enjoy playing. But also, Shane's played brilliantly since he came back to Europe. I'd be interested to hear from him. Is it actually, having grown up, playing on the European Tour, playing around Ireland, playing all these incredibly difficult courses, and then going over to America where it is just bombing it, if it's just so out of kilter, it takes away with the advantage he has over here. Mm. Whereas, if you're an American golfer, and maybe it's going to get worse, that divide, because if you're an American golfer, well, you don't need to learn a lot of the skills of the games now, because you're being told, I'd imagine, working your technique with the driver, if you can't bomb at 320 yards, nothing else is going to... You ain't going to make a living on this PGA Tour.
Yeah. That said, they win their fair share of British Opens.
Mm.
They do.
And they really do, and increasingly so. That'd be the one caveat. Andrew Cushion took a picture. He said, tough week, lads, this. Hashtag friend of the pod. D was watching Shane Lowry and Valderrama. It's a nice way to spend your time. Because Valderrama is one of those courses that Irish people could fly over and enjoy.
It's nearby. Brilliant golf course.
Yeah,
absolutely,
so I hear.
Absolutely brilliant.
Why is it so good then?
It's a strategic golf course. You have to hit it to from A. You have to hit it to A and then go to B. And if you miss A, you have to chip it back to A and then go from there.
Okay.
It's not an exceptionally long golf course, but you just can't miss it in the wrong places.
Okay. Finally, Connor Lawler says, some common sense prevailing in golf. Numbers 2 and 3, lads, about time. I'm looking forward to you discussing in detail on the next podcast in 2022.
We missed 1 week.
We missed 1 week, Connor. Come on now. He's talking about the rules, the 20 most important changes to rules of golf 2019. So he is looking forward to number 2 and 3. Number 2 is, if the ball moves during a search, you just replace. There's no penalty. Number three is an embedded ball free relief from anywhere. The 20 most important rules in golf, I'll rip through them. You can tell me any that you particularly like or dislike. Number one, the search time. Oh, you're down from 5 minutes to three now.
Great idea.
Okay. Ball moving, we mentioned. Embedded ball, we mentioned. Measuring a drop, use your longest club, except putter. Dropping knee height rather than shoulder. Fine, I guess. Makes no big odds. Taking stance on the wrong green, not permitted. What's that about?
I actually don't know this one here.
Say that again?
Taking stance on the wrong green is not permitted.
I think what it's suggesting is that if you hit your ball near another green, that you take full relief away from it rather than standing on the green.
Okay.
Ball hits player or equipment, no penalty.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Does this mean I can strategically put my bag if I have a tricky downhill chip at a certain point? And if it hits my bag, that's just unfortunate.
Yeah, but that's an act of cheating.
It just happened to put his bag there.
I hadn't thought where I left my bag.
Oh, okay.
What are the chances?
Nathan happened to leave his bag right beside mine. Yeah. And our third playing partner left his right there.
Okay.
Listen, we all need backstops. If Brexit has taught us anything, Nathan, that would be cheating. But I mean, prove it.
Prove it.
You're a cheat.
Prove it. To look at myself in the eye in the mirror afterwards, that's the problem, isn't it? Double hit counts as one stroke. Touching the sand in the bunker. That's going to save Nathan Murphy about four shots. Touching sand in the bunker, incidentally, is permitted. So you can accidentally brush off the sand sometimes with your club when
it's
you get in.
It's cost a few people tournaments, that has.
No doubt. Yeah. Again, what's incidentally? So until you're in your
stance.
I would think so, yeah. Everything else is fine.
I think when you're taking the club back and, you know, the bank of the bunker might be beside you and you have to try and take it up really quickly and not touch off the sand.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah.
That's not incidentally.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Is that not part of your swing that you've misjudged it?
Well, are you not making a mistake?
Yeah, exactly. So you should be punished. Mm. That's different to walking in and maybe slipping as you're getting into the...
I thought it was more that.
...into the bunker and your club touches down.
Yeah. You can drop a ball out of a bunker 2 penalty strokes. Can you not drop out of a bunker now?
No.
That's the rule. You just have to stay there.
Yeah.
Okay. There's many a poor bugger whose stroke play... Captain's prize day has been ruined early with that one.
Exactly.
Being in a bunker. So you can take your 2 penalty strokes. Water hazards are now penalty areas. What were they before?
I would have presumed penalty areas, but...
Or do they mean...
You're not allowed to take a shot from the water anymore?
You can't do a...
Bill Haas
out of it. That must be what it means.
Not 100% sure.
Touching the ground in water and penalty areas is acceptable. Oh, interesting. So you can ground your club in that kind of area now. Number 14, we'll get there. Ball moves on the green after being marked. You can put it back without penalty. That's for wind, I presume. 15, ball accidentally moved on putting green. Replace, no penalty. Number 16, can repair all damage on green.
That's tapping down spike marks.
Oh, yeah, good. Okay. I always thought damage was damage. You should be allowed to flatten out your putting surface. Yeah. Positioning a club for alignment is not permitted.
That's fair enough.
What does that mean?
You're not allowed to put a line down, you know, say your feet line or the ball line while playing.
I've never seen anyone do that. Put a club down,
So on the green, you line it up and then you put your club down at your feet to make sure...
Correct, yeah.
To be fair, amateurs don't use the alignment rods anyway, so we're the last people who have to worry about that. I have the cleanest alignment rods in the world.
Yeah, your coach just gets them and whips you with them.
Yeah. 18, caddy assisting with alignment, not permitted.
Yeah, that's to stop the, mainly on the ladies' tour, the caddies lining them up.
I've noticed that, yeah. Not permitted.
Why is that more common on the ladies' tour?
Because I think if you see a guy doing it, he'll probably get slagged while the ladies are just accepting to it.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's just a macho thing?
I think so, yeah.
That actually a lot of the male golfers wouldn't mind their caddy lining it up for them?
I think, yeah, I've seen a few guys do it and then the caddy walks away, they don't stay there. Mm. But on the ladies' tour, they definitely stayed there.
Mm.
Fanny and Faldo used to use it for a while, did they not?
Did they, yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting then that they haven't banned a caddy lining up a putt.
Yeah, that would have been.
I think it's in the same ballpark, isn't it?
Well, that would massively speed up.
Yeah. Number 19, almost there. Ball hitting a flag stick on the putting green is allowed.
So this is to speed up play. You know, you have a 30-footer, your caddy hasn't got up there yet, you can hit the putt and not really worry about if it hits off the flag or not.
Oh, and goes in.
Yeah.
So that should just be you don't have to take the flag out.
Yeah.
Correct.
Why didn't they write the rules properly? That is my favourite rule change of all. There's nothing worse than a 5-footer, 4-footer, and you have to take out the bloody flag.
But or double bogey.
But then, if it hits off the flag and comes out, then that's no good.
That never happens with the putt.
What about?
No. But, I mean, I leave the flag in all the time, practice rounds, and the ball always goes in if it would go in anyway. Obviously, it doesn't go in very often in general terms. So, does that happen, yeah?
It can do, yeah. If the flag is leaning a certain way, yeah.
Yeah, maybe, okay. And then finally, of the 20 most important changes, ball wedged against side of the hole and flag stick is deemed as hold.
This is when the flag stick is like that, ball comes at the side, it looks, you know what I mean, you have to walk up and tap the flag to the left so the ball
goes
down.
Yeah, you hold the flag and let it go in, yeah. So now you don't have to do that.
So now you can just pick it up. Yippee!
I mean, look, I guess it's not bad. It
shows how many ridiculous rules there were.
There is far too many ridiculous rules.
That is a lot of rules.
Yeah.
Okay, they are your tweets. So, gentlemen, the $10 million 78-man WGC HSBC Champions in
the what now?
Shanghai. Champions, they seem to call it. They don't want to call it championship.
No, the WBC HSBC.
What did I say?
The WGC HSBC. No, you got it correct.
Okay. WGC HSBC Champions in Shanghai is on 78 men, $10 million. We have a new world number one, Brooks Koepka. He shot a 72. Round one is done at this stage. We won't labour the point because I know you might listen over the weekend. McIlroy shot a 72. Round of the day, Patrick Reed, a blemish-free 8-under par 64. Stick that up your pipe, Jim Furyk. Performance from Patrick Reed.
The bad boy of golf.
Yeah. Justin Rose, defending champion, and shot a 69. DJ shot a 74. Both Rose and Dustin Johnson could take back the number one spot from Koepka. Koepka very happy last week. He won last week. I've got so much confidence winning these majors. It's incredible. Every time I tee it up, I feel like I have a great chance to win, whether I have my A game or not, as Rory glared at him from a distance. Rory McIlroy, world number five now. He does very well here. He's never won, but he's had five top 10 finishes in six starts.
McIlroy.
Yeah.
Without ever actually having a chance to win it, this is his backdoor Sunday.
Yeah. The world number one spot has changed hands 10 times and through six different pairs of hands since McIlroy last was world number one in 2015. Very turbulent time for the number one spot. Even Koepka, who's won two majors in a season, is looking over his shoulder at Rose and Johnson.
But it proves that now we have quite a number of really, really good golfers.
Or does it prove we have no truly great golfer? Mm.
Well, maybe they're all great.
That would be quite something.
You know, we're just so used to having, you know,
Tiger
or whatever. You know, maybe it's good that, you know, they're beating each other up, you know, per tournament. And we can actually, you know, nobody runs away with tournaments anymore.
I would put it to you, it's bad. I think dominance is interesting and good. I mean, it sets up the narrative very easily. Tiger, who can stop Tiger? Mm. You either enjoy his dominance and luxuriate and appreciate it, and it's Roger Federer-esque, or Greg Norman, you know, for however many weeks, and it's fantastic. And who can topple Norman? And what more can Norman achieve? Whereas at the moment, I think the average punter doesn't even know who the world number one is, and I think that's bad for golf.
So says Joe.
Oof.
And
I get your point. I do just think, though, going back to a conversation from 5 minutes ago about Ernie Els. So, Tiger was dominant. Ernie Els could have 6, 7, 8 majors. Mm-hmm. And he would be one of the great golfers. Yet, he's going to end up probably winning less majors than 3 or 4 of the current generation. Are they better golfers than Ernie Els?
I don't know, actually.
So, that's where the problem... I agree. I like some dominance. I would have liked to have seen, say, Rory McIlroy, obviously, still be the world number one and be the world number one for the last 4 or 5 years. And then, if Koepka's winning a major, it's he beat Rory. Mm. If Spieth is winning majors, it's he beat Rory.
Yeah, you want someone to beat.
Whereas now, who is the best player in golf right now?
Peter, answer.
I would have to say Brooks.
Do you think Brooks will dominate?
Yes, very much so.
You do, yeah?
Yeah.
I think so too, increasingly. The way he's won his majors, the two US Opens, he's won them all in such different ways.
Yeah.
It's just phenomenal. And even this year, holding off Tiger. I mean, that was an extraordinary thing to do under the pressure.
And then before that, the way he destroyed DJ in the final round of the US Open on the Sunday.
Yeah.
He can do everything.
He's a real deal. I have to admit, he has everything. He's your golden boy of America, you know.
You know the way you played with him?
Yes.
Can you get him on the podcast?
I'll definitely try.
We would take him.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably. You could ring him up and say, we played together and we're both former European Tour Rookies of the Year.
Yeah.
It'd be good to...
Can we be there when you call him?
Why don't you organise a reunion?
No, Laurie. Laurie. Peter Laurie. Brooks.
In fairness, he might know who you are, and judging by Brooks, it could still be. What?
That's true. He might have met you the day before.
Organise a reunion of all the European Tour Rookies of the Year.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
How about just picking up the phone and calling them?
I'm just saying, but that could be a good night out for you as well.
Okay.
And we could tag along.
Who are the other Rookies of the Year, European Tour Rookies of the Year? Brooks Koepka. Peter Laurie.
Rory McIlroy.
No,
never won it.
No, I'm the only Irishman to have won it.
Oh, of course.
Right. Of course.
Damn, boy, damn. By the way, I never said anything to you, both of you, about your awards.
Fuck off.
Awards plural? I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
There's no awards plural.
Well, isn't it?
There's only one award.
There's one award, okay.
Who finished second in Rookie of the Year?
Yeah.
I just thought
I'd throw that in there.
Like, you know, generally, you know, some people come up to me and are like, oh, well done, your award. And I'm like, no. Are you taking the piss?
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure. But I was at in Goodison Park last Sunday and I was with Kevin Coban and he says, have you met Chappers? And I was like, we were around him at the Ryder Cup and we never said hello.
Yeah.
I was like, no, I haven't met Chappers. And he brings me over and he's like, Chappers, Nathan. So we're chatting for a couple of minutes. And eventually Chappers goes, Kevin told me to say well done on winning Sports Broadcaster of the Year to you so that you'd have to go.
No, I didn't.
That's Coban.
Coban had rang him that morning to say, I'm going to introduce you to somebody later.
That's poor.
You say to him, congrats on winning Sports Broadcaster of the Year. And I would have had to say, actually, I didn't win it.
That's too much time on your hands, Kevin Coban.
I know.
My goodness, terrible. Sorry, who else has won Rookie of the Year in Europe?
Let me go down through some of the names that I can remember.
Appreciate it. Just Google it.
I think you should just Google
it. We're going off track here. Okay.
I'll quickly Google it while you...
So you think Koepka is going to dominate. That's interesting. Reed with a 64 this morning, and we'll see how all this plays out. Rory could do with a win. It's now... you go back to March for his Bay Hill win, and then it's 18 months before that. So he's in a bad stretch here. Shot a 72. It was a mixed bag, by all accounts, from Rory. This course suits him.
Current Rookie of the Year.
Interesting. Let me think for a second. Is it obvious?
Yes.
Current Rookie of the Year. Where is he from?
That would give it away.
Would it?
Straight away.
Well, we need help.
You know who it is?
If you give me a second, I might get it, but go ahead.
Has he won a major this year?
No.
No.
But he has achieved plenty more.
Go on.
John Rahm.
Okay.
Previous to that, Wong Jeong-hun, Ben Ahn, Brooks Koepka, Peter Uihlein, Ricardo Santos. Hasn't really happened for Ricardo.
No.
Tom Lewis.
Okay.
Matteo Manassero.
Yeah.
Chris Wood.
Yeah.
Pablo Larrazabal. Martin Kaymer.
It's a good list.
Nick Doherty won it the year before you.
Wow. Yeah. What happened to Nick Doherty's game?
Went completely. Absolutely.
Suddenly.
Just lost the plot.
He'd be worth getting on for a chat as well, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
Everybody's very familiar with Nick's work on Sky Sports. So it just went and...
Couldn't get it back and drove himself just about insane.
Does he know why it went?
I did actually speak to him about it because he was the one of the guys that I did talk to when I was in during my own struggles. And he struggled a bit like myself off the tee. And he could hit it absolutely off the planet and couldn't figure out why. And now plays very nice golf, but not with a competing head on.
Mm. Well,
the winner is just before you. So we had Nick Doherty. You won it in 2003 when Ernie Els was European Tour Golfer of the Year. Was there an award ceremony?
There was.
Was there a dinner?
There was.
Oh, yeah?
And he presented.
Ernie presented you with the award? That was nice.
Was indeed.
What's Ernie like?
Lovely fella. Really, really, really nice guy. But he's mad with drinking him. But he's a really nice guy.
He admits that himself, though, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. Mad.
It's Ernie's private jet where all the fun happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
they say it runs on Heineken. That was the big joke. It's not fuel. And they used to surf down for the landings. They'd surf down the aisle.
And if the pilot landed the plane with any kind of bump, he'd go mental.
Right.
Because he was damaging the plane.
It had to be as smooth as anything. But he made a fortune on that plane. He bought it really cheap and sold it and made a fortune.
And had a great time all the way through.
Yeah.
Good man.
Good man, Ernie.
Absolutely. So, Peter Lorre, 2003, sitting beside us in the studio.
Yeah.
2002, Nick Doherty, soon to be guest.
Yeah.
2001, Paul Casey.
Oof.
2000, Ian Poulter.
Yeah, good list.
99, Sergio Garcia.
Oof.
98, Olivier Edmond.
Don't remember him.
No. Thomas Bjorn has won it. Monty has won it. Jose Mario Latabal. Sandy Lyle, Nick Faldo.
Very good list to be on.
Tony Jacklin, Bernard Gallagher.
Well done, Peter Lorre.
Well done. There you go. Well done, Peter.
There Why did you do so well in your first year? What happened? You just... no, I don't mean what happened.
I got lucky.
You couldn't have got lucky.
No, I tell you what it was. And to be honest with you, coming from Challenge Tour, I was... And like all the Challenge Tour guys, you were very ready to be... to get on the European Tour. You know, you'd played a full year of trying to get into this top 15 slot or top 10 slot or whatever it was at the time. So the minute you got your card, you were, you know, raring to go. And all you could think about was trying to earn a whole lot more than what you did on Challenge Tour.
So you went for it?
Absolutely.
Mm. So WGC on in Shanghai. The Sanderson Farms Championship is on the PGA Tour as well. It's a busy week. We should touch on Shane Lowry last week, who finished second in Valderrama. So, you know, Lowry going into this was outside the automatic top 60 on the order of merit, who make it to the Tour Championship finale in Dubai. Finished runner-up to Garcia, so he nets himself €222,000, which is very nice. But maybe more importantly from his point of view, jumps up to 43rd in the ranking, so he'll make the Race to Dubai finale. And from a time around Carnoustie, when he was changing caddy and he was 92nd in the world, he's now up to a far more acceptable and palatable 70th in the world, which will feel a whole lot closer to top 50. So this was really, really big for Shane. He needed to come up with a big week, and I would say he's incredibly relieved.
I would say so too. I spoke to Bo, his caddy, the week of Valderrama, just on the Monday, and I said, what's going on? Like, you know what I mean? How did you miss the cut in the Dunhill? Because that's, as I said before, that was Shane's absolute, you know, that was his tournament. Mm. And he says, Peter, I don't know what's going on, but he's playing lovely golf, and it's only a matter of time. And he was bang on.
Okay. It was a messy tournament. Lots of rain delays.
Yeah, it was impossible to watch. In fact, it was quite literally impossible to watch on Monday.
Yeah.
They didn't televise the final round?
Didn't seem to. I presume all the infrastructure obviously is on a schedule, and they presume it's going to be on a Sunday, and they can't seem to get out.
One of the best things on the PGA Tour is the three times a season they're forced to play on Monday, and you get a little bit of golf at 4 o'clock on a Monday afternoon.
Yeah. My overriding sense of following Shane Lowry on Instagram is that he was bored out of his tree during the rain delays. He threw out a Ask Me Anything, and boy did he answer.
Oh.
And it went on forever.
It was... It must have gone on for about 4 hours.
Just... Forever.
He's in a good position then, 73rd, because I guess you're entering a 3 month or a 6 week stretch where after this week, most of the best players in the world won't play again. After this week, none of the Americans probably won't play again.
No, the next couple of tournaments that Shane will play in, okay, he misses this week, which is unfortunate.
Well, Wendy's running in the Dublin Marathon.
Okay.
Yeah, for Crumlin Children's Hospital, where she was a paediatric nurse. So she's come back to do that. So he's on dad duty. Well, he's then going Turkish Airlines Open, Nedbank Challenge, DP World Tour Championship. And then he's then to Australia. He's playing in that World Cup thingy with Paul Dunne. So he's actually very busy, Larry, for the next few weeks.
Yeah, it'll be good for him too.
Mm. So two good results in that stretch, and you're probably top 50 and you're playing the Masters again?
I can see him doing well in Turkey, because he's done well there before, and he'll do well in Dubai.
Small tangent while you're going through some of the events that are coming up. The Nedbank used to be in January, is it?
Yes, it was. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
So the European Tour are going to release their schedule over the coming days, weeks, for next year.
Yeah.
And a lot of speculation that the French Open is no longer going to be a Rolex Series event, that they've lost their sponsor straight after the Ryder Cup.
Well, that wouldn't surprise me at all.
And there won't be one of the...
big seven, is it?
Yeah.
And that Abu Dhabi is going to take its spot.
You would have to say the Rolex Series is in a bit of danger here. It's not attracting good enough feels.
No. A couple of really poor feels.
Yeah, including Ballyliffin. Rory saves the face of the Irish Open.
And John Rahm, because he's the defending champion.
Now, Rahm is gone. Rory will continue to save face, but it was a poor-ish field in comparison with the excitement of the previous few years, the Royal County Down era, when Rory was really pulling out the stops. So the Irish Open is along with the other Rolex Series, not getting the names.
No. I think they made a big mistake of what they looked for a different date, didn't they? They're trying their hardest to try and get the date before the British Open. Mm-hmm. They're going to struggle with that because of the Scottish Open. But there again, you have to think about where they went to and guys trying to get there.
Ballyliffin factor.
Yeah.
Well, this year could be different because, well, even though Lahinch is still, it's a bit of a trek, but it's only, you can fly straight into Shannon and you're in Lahinch in 45 minutes. But also, I'd imagine they're really going to target the Americans who you can say, come to Ireland for 3 weeks, you don't have to leave and hang around for Portrush.
Stay in Adair Manor.
Yeah. If we're not already booked in.
Future Ryder Cup venue.
Yeah, well, exactly. Mm.
Did you see that? Did you talk about that? That there was the meeting on the final day of the Ryder Cup? You can answer this because we both found it a bit strange in that, so Shane Ross went over to Le Golf National on the Sunday of the Ryder Cup for a sort of, I don't know, were they discreet negotiations, but because of freedom of information it all came out as to why he was there. So he sat down with the heads of the European Tour and the Ryder Cup, and Paul McGinley was in the meeting as well, just to chat about 2026. It seems quite strange that on the final day of the Ryder Cup you're sitting in meetings.
Look, that's the European Tour all over for you.
And would you not be out watching the golf on the final day? Yeah,
I do feel it strange Keith Kelly missed the final day of the Ryder Cup.
Have the meeting on the Monday.
I guarantee they went out and watched the last couple of holes or whatever.
They missed the day, effectively, having a meeting.
I wouldn't have thought, I'm sure they're meeting other people if they're meeting the Irish.
I would have said they were meeting quite a few people at the time. But I suppose it was to bring them over and show the people, this is what we expect. So if you're going to put in a bid, this is what we expect to be, you know, been putting in. I think the one that we're saying, or a lot of people are saying, it's definitely going to be in Adair. It's definitely going to be, you know, in 2026 in Ireland. I'd be very cautious of
would
that.
Would you?
One. Yeah.
So what is the word? Is Italy going to happen? Because
I made a couple of predictions a while ago, right? And whether they're right or wrong, who knows? Mm. You know. Italy or having the Ryder Cup in Italy was one of them that I said that wouldn't happen, and with the new parliament that's going on over there, and you know their talks about with the EU and with Brussels, I would say it might not, but you never know.
Yeah,
I guess bringing them over then on the Sunday and having those negotiations is probably also a reminder that just saying you're going to have the Ryder Cup in 2026 is very different to actually putting up however many millions you need to years in advance to secure it.
Look, Italy paid close on 160 million for the Ryder Cup, right? That was their total probably spend to get the Ryder Cup. And, you know, we all know through the papers that JP offered 50 million to the European Tour quite some time ago. So there's a big difference between 50 and 160.
Mm.
But you never know.
So you just pay, like, is it like a bidding process? You just pay them?
That it's just a pure bidding process.
And what would the Irish government have paid in 2006? They would have paid money as well, presumably.
I haven't a clue. I would have said they would have put money into it through Bord Fáilte and whatever else, but it would have been a bidding process of Smurfit would have had to put in money because he was getting the European Open for so many years. Bord Fáilte would have had to put in money and whoever else had to put in money.
Okay. Johnny Miller. We should touch on Johnny Miller before we go. So Johnny Miller has 24 grandchildren.
Wow.
It's a lot of birthdays to remember. And he wants to take some time out to look after the grandchildren, help out with his family. So he's retiring from NBC after nearly three decades as their lead golf analyst. And he is out the door. John Feinstein wrote a really good piece about Miller and his contribution. Like, there are people saying he's already in the Hall of Fame with his two majors and 25 tour wins. Mm. You'll allow that, Peter, will you?
Absolutely.
Okay. There's people saying he should be re-inducted for his broadcasting as well. He's that good, you know. Yeah. First joined NBC in 1990, says Feinstein. He would criticise club decisions. He wondered why players were aggressive when caution might be called for and cautious when aggression might be the right play. And he used the C word, as in choke.
couple of years ago, says Feinstein, I was part of a fireside chat at an event with Davis Love III. Someone asked a question about his relationship with the media, which has always been very good. He said, there is a difference though, Love, reporters and the guys who work on TV. As the CBS producer Lance Barrow always reminds me, we are your partners, and they are. And Feinstein says, most of the time that notion of partnership comes roaring through the TV screen, regardless of what network you're watching. Every player on tour is a wonderful person. When they hit a poor shot, there's always a reason. How many times have you heard someone say he hit a perfect putt and the putt didn't go in the hole? A perfect putt, for the record, is one that goes in. And he makes the point that Miller did none of that. He called out the bad shots. He was relentlessly honest and critical of clubs and courses and players where needs be, and was quite brilliant.
Look, our game, golf in general, needs far more honesty than what's out there. Like, if you ask a guy how he's playing, just tell me how you're playing or how you felt or whatever. Don't give me the typical answer that is, you know, either bred into them or told by their manager to say absolutely nothing. And, you know, and we've seen interviews throughout golf that you get guys saying literally, they say a lot but say nothing. They're like politicians. Miller was in the case of he didn't give a damn who he was offending, and that sort of probably hurt him in a little bit, but the audience actually liked for what they were getting, and that was, to be honest with you, it was one thing I did was, you know, say it as it is. When I was losing my card, how was I feeling? Jeez, I'm feeling shite. You know what I mean? I'm really worried, I'm this, I'm that, I'm the other, you know? Mm. And then you get other guys saying, oh, yeah, I'll be grand, you know, while they're completely not. Mm.
There was some talk that Brandel Chamblee might replace Miller. In the end, it's going to be Paul Azinger, which we can talk about in a second. But the one thing that's always thrown at Chamblee by the players is, well, what does he know? He was a rank average player. Who is he to comment on me? They could never throw that at Miller when he was calling them out.
No, and he kept calling them out right to the end, pretty much. You think back earlier in the year and Ricky Fowler winning the tournament and Miller slaughtered him throughout the back nine. He had a little bit of a mini collapse. He still won a tournament and hasn't won anywhere near enough. It would have been easy to do Ricky Fowler actually is a very nice guy. It's one thing everyone says about him.
Yeah.
But he went to town on lack of majors, lack of backbone, again and again and again. Fowler, I think, was quite vocal in how unhappy he was that I've won the tournament.
Yes.
And I'm being slaughtered for this.
Yeah. Miller's made a point of saying he tries not to be friendly with the players at all. And he will walk the course every time and be ready to go from that point of view, but he's not out there trying to get anecdotes from the players. They did a Johnny Miller's best comments kind of montage. So there was one time where Phil Mickelson was hitting another chip from another dodgy part of the course, and Miller said if he couldn't chip, he'd be selling cars in San Diego, which is a hell of a thought. The one that I always remember is the Craig Parry line, and he was analysing Parry, who just hit a shot. And he said, the last time you see that swing is in a pro-am with a guy who's about a 15 handicap. It's over the top. He cups it at the bottom, but he hits it unbelievably good. It just doesn't look... If Ben Hogan saw that, he'd puke. As Parry's playing in the tournament. And then Justin Leonard, Ryder Cup. My hunch is that Justin needs to go home and watch it on television, said Johnny Miller. Zingers.
Zingers.
Yeah. Hey.
See what you did there.
I did there. That was unintentional. So, I mean, look, Faldo, I think, is very good, but Miller is the best of the best, and Chamblee, I think. So he's a big, big loss. I'm really sad to see him go.
Yeah, so am I. Yeah.
Chamblee is... I think Chamblee's slightly different, and I wonder, would Chamblee be as strong if he was doing that live analysis? Because what makes Chamblee brilliant is actually he goes home after a Saturday night and delves deep into the numbers and emerges on Sunday, and he is ready.
Miller is a bit more instinctively, this is what I think. As it's happening, here's what I think, go.
Whereas actually, Chamblee need to change his ways because, as you say, you need to instinctively react on an emotional level to what you've just seen. Whereas Chamblee, it seems to be more aware than anybody that actually it's very hard for me to contend with Johnny Miller, Paul Azinger, major champions, Faldo. People are going to question me constantly. So, as he often says, I do more research than anybody else.
Yes.
Which isn't really that role. Mm. It'd be great to see him in a stronger role.
Yeah. No, I take your point.
But Azinger's not going to be like that either, though. Azinger's not going to be as honest and as quick-witted as...
Miller.
No.
Miller. I was just about to say Jacobson for someone on
you slow one. Your quick wit down there a sec, will you?
Yeah, trying to keep up here.
Over time, though, I think Gaisinger might.
I think Gaisinger's been very good when he's done the BBC, I must say. Really good. And got a nice way about him. I mean, he's the voice twin of Rich Beam as well, is the other thing. Like, I literally thought, I was like, oh, Rich Beam's doing BBC on Sky for a while.
He would be close to the players, you'd imagine. And also say, I just want someone constantly to have a pop at Phil is like the ultimate test of any pundit that they're willing to criticise Phil.
And get away with
There's
it.
There's no way Aisinger is going to criticise Phil.
I think so.
Well, considering Phil literally threw Tom Watson under the bus to laud Paul Aisinger.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, so that's happening. I think Miller's last tournament is going to be the Phoenix Open. That's what he's going to bow out on. He's
running down 16 to the acclaim of the crowd.
Yeah, absolutely. You had some interesting...
Well, just before I get to that, obviously one of the things that Paul Aisinger has to look forward to is that wonderful moment on a Sunday, early Sunday evening, when the head of Shell or whoever arrives in and talks about the great charitable work that they're doing in the local area, and we all bow down and thank them. Well, some good news again, Joe, from golf and the charitable front.
Yeah.
It's all about giving.
Yeah.
Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson.
Oh, yes.
They're going to give some cash to charity. From there, is it 9 million or 10 million?
Nine, because they can't do FedEx 10.
$9 million game. Still being finalised, but
or
Mickelson's manager...
11. Either way, it's one
Steve Loy of Lagarde Sports has told Golf Channel that the left-hander plans to donate portions of the charitable proceeds raised to his own foundation.
Well, steady on, Phil. Keep some for yourself.
Loy also said that additional charitable funds will come from Mickelson, Woods and the PGA Tour from the event's media rights fees. Woods' manager confirmed that his portion of the charitable proceeds will be donated to the Tiger Woods Foundation and other local charities.
His own foundation.
So I'm just wondering there, there's no confirmation that all the money's going to charity. It's a portion is already being set aside for charity.
They've given $10,000 to charity.
How do they legitimately walk off with a giant novelty lotto-sized check for 9 million quid? Like,
they just do.
To be honest, I don't think this is going to happen.
You think it'll just be such a flop?
I think it'll just be such a flop that, you know, people are just... They're not willing to... Mickelson and Tiger... Tiger, okay, is coming back into the era, but I certainly wouldn't watch it. I don't know about anybody else.
Well, they have been absolutely screwed over in the promotion stakes by every other player on tour, because everybody's obviously asked about it. And I haven't heard a single player say...
Can't wait.
Every single one goes, when's it on? Nah, I'll be watching college football.
Nah. Yeah.
I'm certainly not paying for it. If it was one of the... was it Poulter or Fleetwood? Was if it's on Sky Sports when I'm at home, I'll probably watch it.
Yeah.
But I ain't paying for it.
No one's going to seek it out is the problem for this thing. And they've put it on pay-per-view. I saw the Golf Channel a couple of weeks ago and they were having like a round table, one of their shows, and like they were going berserk about it, you know? Because news had just come through at that point that it was going to be a very restricted...
there's going to be nobody...
Attendance.
Nobody watching it.
Yeah. So like they were going berserk, like, why in the area? Why are you not bringing all the school kids in the area? Why are you not going around and getting as many people on board and trying to grow the game and all this stuff?
Golf,
instead, it's just going to be like, I don't know, Michael Jordan and a few other selected people. So there's actually going to be no atmosphere on course.
So it's Tiger plays a round of his life. And
yeah. Empty course. And they were bringing up the charity thing as well. Why not for charity? Now, they've obviously heard some of the calls and maybe changed that. But the pay-per-view thing, how much do they charge in pay-per-view?
Someone said $30.
Ah, stop.
No, because I think, I could be wrong, but I thought that they were justifying it on, people pay $100 for a fight now.
Stop.
Now it's a different pay-per-view culture in America to what we have here.
I know, but $30.
We pay for the dodgy box rather than the actual
pay-per-view.
You'll
get it on that, so you'll probably be all right.
I mean,
you'll have Steinberg coming for you, though.
It'll be on YouTube the next day.
Yeah. And again,
I don't know what I watch.
Does it matter? Like, what is... There is literally nothing at stake.
Nothing at all. No one's pride's at stake.
Oh,
no, because
Tiger, those 14 majors. But do you remember that time Mickelson...
Is Mickelson the greatest of all time if he beats Tiger?
Could be.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. When is it on?
November... About 2 or 3 weeks.
It's on in 2 or 3 weeks?
Yeah.
Is it not next year?
No, it's on November.
Ah, Jesus. No, it's on this. It's on in a few weeks.
I think it'll flatten its face.
Are you really not into it, no?
Not at all, no.
Francesco Molinari.
Yes, we'll finish on everyone's favourite Italian. Couldn't think of anything else.
You should have just gone.
You're getting like me, Joe.
You should have just gone. Everybody's favourite.
Blankety blank.
Molinari.
Oh, dear.
Wow.
And he's not even everyone's favourite Italian.
Oh, so, well, Italian.
Yeah.
No, I was going to say he's not even everybody's favourite Molinari. I love Eduardo.
He's
a great guy.
He is.
Oh, jeez.
Screwed over rightly.
Peter, who's your favourite Italian?
Ooh.
Pirlo. Pirlo's in the top 10, surely.
Trap.
Pavarotti. Got to be up there.
Yeah. He's dead.
He's still an Italian.
When you die, do you lose your...
How far back are you going
here,
though?
Do you lose?
I thought you meant living.
Leonardo da Vinci, of course.
Let's move on to Molinari, will we?
I've got Weekly OTB for your favourite Italian.
This is like that time we were out one night and the conversation turned particularly poor. McIntyre must have been involved somewhere where it was just simply trying to name famous Belgians.
That's what happens when you're at McIntyre. It's just a contest.
Wow.
Name, insert, pointless thing here.
Right. Yeah. So, Francesco Molinari.
Yeah.
Everybody's favourite Italian. Sean Martin has written a piece about him.
Henceforth, that's how we're going to have to refer to him.
So, obviously he's had a decent year.
Yeah.
Open champion.
Yeah.
5-0-0 at the Ryder Cup. Mm-hmm. Added 10 yards to his average driving distance in the last 12 months. Oh. Added 20 yards in the last 3 years. He's gone from an average of 281 yards to an average of 301 yards.
Wow.
Now, 301 is still only 52nd. But still brings them in line with where you want to be.
That's amazing.
So Mark Brody, who is the man who invented strokes gained, the entire statistics, quantified the benefits of increased distance in his book, Every Shot Counts. An extra 20 yards off the tee can be worth up to 3 strokes per tournament.
I'm not doubting it.
Say that again, I blanked out.
It's too warm in here, it's too warm
You're
in here. Joe's asleep
at the vital moment. Yeah.
An extra 20 yards on average is worth 3 strokes per tournament.
20 yards, 3 strokes per tournament. Right, okay. I'd believe that, yeah.
So everyone's focusing on his putting.
Yes.
Whereas actually,
interesting,
his driving has been a massive part of his improvement. They say his compact swing offered room for improvement. He now makes a bigger turn on the backswing to create more speed. He tries to feel his sternum turning as far and as high from the ball as possible.
Sounds oddly sexual.
He did change equipment this year, by the way.
He lifts his heel off. He lifts his left heel off the ground.
And probably last year. He was a Nike player through and through.
Oh, yeah, he was.
From top to bottom.
Yeah.
So maybe that 10 yards is because he's using a different equipment.
Right. Interesting. Wow. Yeah, okay.
Or he could be working with George Ganangs? Ganas? How do you pronounce the second name?
Is this the thing Alan Shipnuck was writing about?
Yeah. How do you pronounce that
Gankas.
Name? Gankas.
What do you know about him?
Harrington's working with him.
What?
Harrington's working with him. Sends him videos.
Were you going to let me just say goodbye, everyone, and not mention this? What is wrong with you?
Have you not heard about this guy?
No.
This guy has a range in the middle of nowhere where people come and pay 350 quid for a lesson. Uh-huh. And he can get you to hit it miles.
Where is this place?
Tullamore.
No, he's a... we're going to go back into it because I was reading it actually yesterday or maybe last night or whatever. Introducing the hottest swing coach in golf whose players swing it at... How far? How fast?
125.
30.
Oof. 130.
What did you swing at?
112. He has, when I read through it, Harrington has been with him for quite some time, sends him swings, and he goes back and forwards. He's one of these Californian cool coaches, but he's got a cult following.
Has he had any success, though?
Well, he's pretty successful with Harrington, is he not? Never mind a couple of others. But anyway, he's going online and he's going to start charging people 30 quid a go to download his techniques of how to hit it further.
What's his name?
George Gankas.
Gankas.
George Gankas.
He was great friends with Chris Como.
Oh yeah, Tigers.
Tigers man.
Okay, yeah. Interesting. He's a young guy.
There he is. Yeah. He's 47.
He's doing a karate pose in that
picture. I'm not quite sure what he's up to. But he's huge on Instagram.
Yeah.
75,000 followers.
Right.
2 million minutes watched on YouTube.
Okay.
So there you go.
That's from Harrington alone.
So maybe,
180 quid a year.
Maybe a...
videos.
180 quid for a year is ridiculous. Mm. I don't know. But is he going to give you any individual feedback? Otherwise, it's no good.
Not like us, Joe. We're going to give the viewers and the listeners some feedback.
You're the Mr. Gankus of golf podcasts.
No. I'm definitely not that cool.
If we start charging, why did you just put it out there for free?
I don't know.
He's the European Tour Rookie of the Year. Tenner a pop if these people want their reviews.
But we do this for free. So we can't break our
Well, at some stage we're going to have to. You know, at some stage.
The last 10 minutes gives us no license to charge. It's been an absolute catastrophe.
I wonder if George Gankus is making shitloads of money. There's none of this crap. It's just straight to the good stuff.
No.
Swinging the ball 130 kilometres an hour.
If you want to hit it far, have a look at George Gankus.
Don't undercut what you're about to do. You're trying to create your own market and you're sending everyone to Gankus.
We're creating the Francesco Molinari.
So you say Molinari, everybody's favourite Italian, is going to Gankus.
I said he could be.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
If he's hitting it this further. But
Harrington is.
I did throw in there, he has changed the equipment. He got rid of the Nike stuff, which everybody said was...
With the greatest respect to Ireland's greatest ever sports person, is there any other professional golfer going to this guy?
I don't know off the top of my head, but I think there are, yes.
It's not just Harrington.
No.
Adam Scott has turned to George Gankus.
Oh, my God.
There you go.
Wow. We're going to have to do some research on
that. Yeah, we're live researching here as we speak.
Yeah, well, that's the way forward.
I don't know if it is based on our conversation. So Adam Scott's gone to him.
Mm. Yeah.
What's he going to do for Adam Scott?
To hit it further. It's all about hitting it further, Joe.
Well, I know that.
In trying to figure out where to go, Scott has begun to venture down an unusual path. Instead of addressing whatever issues were cropping up in his swing on his own, since he split from Butch Harmon in 2009, he's been turning to a couple of different coaches since. He has turned to George Gankus, better known as GG Swing Tips, in the social media world. Though it sounds like an adult
model. I guarantee all the people listening, right, have heard of this guy.
Essentially, he's a YouTuber, and now we're sounding very old.
Oh, no, I'm all across the YouTubers.
There you go.
Mark Crossfield, all the lads, I'm all with them. I just haven't come across this guy.
Well, this guy is the king.
Yeah.
So, his handle has since changed after a disagreement with his business partner. Uh-huh. He's a 47-year-old Southern Californian who's developed a cult following a series of instructional videos shared through Instagram and Twitter. Gankus YouTube channel has gotten more than 3 million views and has 20,000 subscribers. His Instagram account now has 93,000 followers. Scott watched several of Gankus's videos recently and liked what he saw, so he gave the instructor a call. The two started working together this year, with Scott taking a couple of lessons from Gankus during tour stops at Riviera and Bay Hill.
Wow.
Yes, you read that correctly. The owner of the most majestic swing in the game, a green jacket, 14 PGA Tour titles, has hired a guy because he liked his YouTube videos. You see, if we took this shit more seriously.
Oh, wow.
It's unlike me to come up with something like this, though, isn't it?
Huh? I'm just thinking.
Yeah, there you go.
Somebody not be listening to this and going, let's just have them over for dinner. Like Nick Faldo brings Connor Sketches for dinner.
Yeah.
If you listen to this.
Trust me, you don't want to go to dinner with Nick Faldo.
Well, Peter.
Been there, done that.
You can't say that. Why not?
Pass.
So is there anything else?
No, that edit doesn't work. I think we're done.
Let's get George Gankus on and get him to replay.
Let's get George Gankus on for real.
Yeah.
You phone up Brooks Koepka.
Okay.
In front of us. Want to hear that, yeah. And then we'll get on to George Gankus. And
can we do it live?
Brooks?
Yeah.
All right. We will literally do it whenever suits Brooks.
Yeah, I think whatever suits him, we'll make ourselves available.
Like,
no problem.
Do you think he'd prefer to do it live as opposed to record it? Why did you ask that?
No, I just wanted to make sure the phone call would be live, just to improve.
Oh, you think we should ring him?
Yeah.
So we should put you out there, ring him live, on air.
Yeah.
Well, let's do that then, where they have the phone ringing and the tension of will he answer, won't he answer?
Exactly,
If he doesn't answer, would you suspect he's screening you?
No.
Do you have his phone number?
None of your... No, I don't.
Who's the most famous person you have in your phone book?
Harrington. He's very famous.
It definitely has his number in my phone book. Yeah. I have a few others, though.
There's that game they play on BBC, on the Radio 1 show, The Breakfast Show, where you have to... Your choice is prank or delete. So we go through your phone book, and it's like, do you want to risk deleting Brooks Koepka's number? And if you don't, we have to prank him. I think we could play that with you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that could be hurtful.
Or the one that Michael McIntyre does, where, again, they literally just take your phone and...
Oh, yeah, text people.
Send everybody in your phone book the exact same message.
Yeah.
Wow.
Anyway. I might even all this in because I don't know if this is.
No, I think we could do that. We could text everybody in Peter's phone books in, thinking of getting back into the game. Sort me out with a couple of invites.
No, I did that one already. They've already had that text.
I think we'll leave it there then.
Okay.
All right. Well done, us. That was really
better. Again, text everybody in your phone saying, "Hey, getting into coaching, seen a couple of things in your swing. I could give you some advice on," and send it to McIlroy.
Yeah. Well, I tried that vocally, but it didn't.
Have you got Rory in your phone?
No.
Burnt.
It's a bitter pill.
Burnt.
Have you got? You've got McGinley.
Yeah.
You've got.
Are we going live here now?
Any other European Tour rookies of the year?
Shane Lowry. You've got Shane Lowry.
Yes.
Have you got Monty?
Yes.
Oh!
Can we get Monty on?
Come on!
I tried to get him on.
And he tell you where to go?
Yeah.
Did he really?
No, he didn't. The manager did.
Was that before or after you said he most definitely should not be in the World Golf of All Fame?
Probably before.
Have you got Faldo?
I do have it, yeah, but I don't know whether it's in this one or not, but I do have it.
I mean, we'd love Faldo on. This is actually we'll call this a production meeting. People can stop listening if they want.
People are like, this podcast could turn out to be brilliant in the coming weeks.
Faldo, we should really try. I mean, Faldo's an amazing story.
Yeah.
Nick,
who's going to interview
him? Peter said you had the least amount of natural talent of anyone he'd seen.
And he'd probably agree with me.
Yeah, no, it'd be a good start. We can all interview him. Mm. We can all do it.
I think the person we should have us on is the first guy we should have on is Eddie Pepperell.
Oh, well.
Well, listen, absolutely.
Eddie. British Masters champion.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Do you have. I was going to say Olathabal, but then I'm not that pushed.
No.
Played golf there with Olathabal last year.
That's true. You literally played.
He wouldn't give me my number. Give me his number.
No?
Well, it'd be rude to ask at a pro-am.
Who else do we want?
I feel like we're really connected, Jose. Any chance to just give him the mobile number?
Who else? Who are you holding back there?
Nobody.
Sergio?
No.
Oof. Justin Rose?
No.
Thomas Bjorn?
Yes.
Oh, take Thomas Bjorn. Yeah. European Ryder Cup captain?
Yeah.
Jeez. We've literally spent an hour talking absolute shite joke.
Why don't we ask the listeners? Why don't we ask the listeners?
Would Thomas Bjorn have been better in the last 10 minutes? Is the question.
Why don't we ask the listeners who they'd like? Tweet in.
On a serious point, am I leaving all this shit in?
It's up to you, Joe. Right. I think we should wrap it up eventually.
Well, then we got to wrap it. I don't know if we should. I'm never leaving this in again if we do. It's been absolutely dreadful. Peter, and you played your part.
Thanks.
We should say as well.
Yeah.
This Gankus business took us down a hole.
Yeah. Okay. Gankus.
We'll talk next week with Colin Montgomery, Nick Faldo and Sergio Garcia on the pod. All my exes wear Rolexes, but I reside right here in Dardanelle. Started.